Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me. We are going to have fun tonight because we are learning to be ourselves. When's the last time you were yourself, truly yourself? It seems simple and a silly question because no one knows you better than you, right? Why then do we have so much trouble letting our hair down, being confident in who we are, and trusting our own opinions and intuitions? This may be the key, and as elusive as the fountain of youth, but don't you think you're worth it? If you're ready to open up and trust that you are unique, talented, and worthy, and that even though you may not feel that today, you could, then let's go. Let's start learning how you can become you. So if someone said to you, "Who are you?" how would you answer? Would you identify with your role in life? Father, mother, CEO, teacher, musician, artist, etc.? Would you identify with your characteristics? Chronically late, laid back, pretentious, a good friend, a great listener, etc.? What if someone asked you if you were being yourself right now? How would you respond? How long does it even take to become yourself? I hope, even if you have a handle on who you are, that you're still evolving and growing. But even from birth, you had some inherent attributes, things that made you, you. I found an article on Bustle while I was searching for which attributes you're born with. I always wanted to know that. This piece includes perspectives from some of the experts, like therapist Heidi McBain. She says typical personality traits you're born with are those you'd see on the Myers-Briggs indicator assessment. It can tell you if you're introverted or extroverted, sensing or intuitive, thinking or feeling, or judging and perceiving. These are traits people have when perceiving the world around them. She says, for example, introverts would generally prefer to be alone or in small groups because this is where they can get their energy, whereas the opposite is true for extroverts. So introversion is something you're just born with. But other traits like being a good public speaker or a leader are things you can develop. People are often surprised to learn that many great speakers are actually introverts. Do they feel drained after they speak in front of a large audience? Well, maybe they do, but the bigger picture is that they are honing in on other skills they have. Be it communication or humor or storytelling, so they can connect with their audience as a whole. So here are some examples of personality traits people just have versus ones they can develop. So maybe some of these you have and maybe some of them you still want to develop. Like being a good conversationalist is something you can actually develop. Clinical therapist and wellness blogger Dominique Talley tells Bustle, "So many people struggle to make conversation with new people and feel comfortable doing so. An awkward conversation is one of the biggest buzzkills," right? So the good news is being good at communicating with others, especially strangers, is something you can learn to develop. Good talkers aren't necessarily just born that way. That's what my mom told me. According to Talley, good conversations are those that are interesting, feel natural, put people at ease, and make them want to stick around for more. The best way to do this is to think of conversation as a game of tennis. When the ball is hit onto your side of the court, you have to hit it back, or the play will end, right? So one good tip to remember is to keep asking questions. When you get an answer, hit the ball back. having emotional intelligence is something you're born with. Emotional intelligence is it's a real big buzzword right now, right? It's the EQ or the EI. Emotional intelligence is a set of emotional and social skills that influence the way we perceive and express ourselves, develop and maintain social relationships, cope with challenges, and use emotional information in an effective and meaningful way. Some people just know how to interact with others in the right way without having to learn it. Being confident is something you can develop. People that are confident tend to present themselves one way and just go for it. Oftentimes, they can seem more interesting for that reason. Although gaining confidence can be challenging for some, the good news is everyone can have it if you're willing to work for it. The fastest way to increase your confidence is to try faking it until you make it. See, I told you that was a real thing. Often people assume that feeling more confident will make them appear more confident, but it actually works the other way. As with so many things, the feelings will follow the actions. So in other words, when you act confidently, even if you don't necessarily feel it inside, those feelings of security and self-assurance will eventually follow. It's one of those things you can do to pep yourself up before a big talk. You go out and you're feeling nervous and you just know you're going to get it. You stand tall, put your shoulders back, take in a big breath, walk really proud onto the stage. You're faking it until you make it. It works. Showing genuine interest in others is something you can actually develop, and that is good news, right? It's a personality trait you may find compelling, right? While it's simple enough in concept, it does take some work and practice. You have to truly listen to what people are telling you. Often we have conversations with people and spend most of our time thinking about ourselves, right? You hear somebody say something, they're giving you a story, and your mind goes off on a tangent. You're not saying it out loud, hopefully, but it does go off on a tangent. Oh yeah, I remember when that happened to me. Yeah, that was really cool. I should give that person a call, or I should do that. You're not even listening anymore. So pay attention, not only to the person's words, but to their facial expressions and mannerisms. Maybe someone's face lights up when they mention having a dog. You can then remark that it sounds like they love their dog and ask questions about what type of dog they have. It's all about learning to be observant and aware of the people that you're talking to. How about having a positive outlook is something that you're born with? What? People typically enjoy being around positive people much more than negative ones. Some people naturally see the positive side of things much easier than others. Although it's hard to see the bright and sunny side of everything all the time, positive people have a way of turning negativity around easily. For those who aren't naturally positive, choosing to make an effort to be positive in conversations and social interactions can make connecting with people much easier. One of the tips for that is to wake up and look for gratitude. Look for things that you're thankful for. That can put you in a wonderful mood versus waking up and thinking of all the things you have left to do, all the pressures of your day, getting down with that thought. That can put you in a negative mood, which means it just snowballs, right? You meet someone else who did the same thing. They woke up with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder as well. And all of a sudden, you're both off in a disastrous conversation. Being a good listener is something you can develop. Being a good conversationalist involves more than knowing the right things to say. Being an active listener is equally important. When you're in a social situation and you provide space for people to talk about themselves and feel as though they are being heard, you immediately create an opportunity for people to talk about themselves in a positive manner, which makes them not only feel good about themselves, but feel good about you too. So don't just ask questions to just ask questions. If you listen, remember the dog. If you listen and respond, you are going to be more active listening and an active participant in the conversation. This is one trait that even if it doesn't come naturally, it is easy to practice and take on. So as someone's talking, instead of going off on your own tangent, you want to listen to those words as if you are speaking them back to the person. In couples therapy, I know we've all seen them modeling. So what I heard you say is this, and that is to strengthen communication so that you're actually hearing what the other person is saying, but you're also becoming an active listener. You have to be an active listener in order to repeat that. Having a sense of humor is something you can develop. Some people think being funny is really lovable, although it may seem like some people are just naturally funny, and they can be. It's something you can actually develop. The nature of humor is founded in social and circumstantial experiences. Without those experiences and intricate understanding of human nature, it's tough to be funny. Given that people aren't born with these experiences, it's a simple conclusion that a sense of humor is developed and not born with. Now, kids and toddlers may at times be unintentionally funny, but it takes time and experience before everyday humor and quips are mastered. So if being funny is something you've always wanted to know how to do, it can be learned and it can be developed. I was an outgoing kid from the start. I can remember before seatbelts, my parents would say, "Kendall, sit back and be quiet." Oh, if I had a dime for every time I heard that phrase. In the first grade, Mrs. Sitter gave me an E in conduct. She wrote on my report card, "She talks more than I do, and I'm the teacher." My mom wasn't worried about someone stealing me at the mall. She was worried I would walk off with a stranger. I never met a stranger. This trait was inherent, and even though it has gotten me into trouble through the years, it has also been my greatest asset, and today, my craft. What hasn't been so black and white, and what took development, is my confidence and my self-concept. Professionally, I have all the confidence in the world. I know I'm good at what I do. I know I'm an expert in my field. But personally, I'm quick to bend and conform to what others want and need. I'm a people pleaser. And as a result, I'm worried about other people's feelings, comfort levels, and opinions of me. Everyone starts out in life wanting to be safe, loved, and accepted. It's in our DNA. Some of us figure out that the best way to do this is to put aside what we want or feel and allow someone else's needs and feelings to take precedence. But this can be habitual, and before you know it, you're not even sure what your needs and feelings are and where your feelings end and another person's begins. You lose touch with who you are and what you want. Switching the focus to yourself, though, will feel awkward. And yes, sometimes even selfish. In this state, you can put too much importance on responsibility, i.e. control you feel you have over someone else, and put your own self-care on hold, thinking you just don't have enough time. How many times have you said that? I just don't have the time. But I challenge you already. Not the end of the show, but I challenge you. If this is your thinking, it's time to let go. Slowly start stepping back and allowing your family, your friends, your loved ones to lead their own lives, meet their own challenges, and right their own wrongs. It's time you take care of you. And in order to find the time you feel you don't have, you have to let go. You have to rechannel it, reprioritize, right? What a freeing feeling. When you have all that time and mental focus back and you're channeling it on your own journey, dreams, and goals, look out. Victoria Ayers is a writer, and she proposes some interesting questions and steps that she found useful to find herself. First question, something that came up when I thought about it as well, being yourself. Well, what if someone is a jerk? Is it okay for them to just be themselves and go on being a jerk to everyone? How about people who are fearful of being around others and live like a hermit. And they avoid life and avoid people. Should they just be themselves? In my quest for answers, I found that it is very much possible to be yourself. The person who's a jerk to others and the person who's afraid of social situations are, in actuality, not being themselves. Their real self is just being covered up with conditions and fear-based thinking. Our true selves, who we really are, when we let go of all of these other stories and labels and judgments that we've placed upon ourselves, that's who we really are. It's who we are naturally are without the masks and pretentiousness. So let's strip it all off and get in touch with your inner child. If you ever watch small children, you'll notice just how free they are and how little they care about what other people think. Wasn't that a nice time in your life? They're happy and they're in the moment. They are their true natures. They've not yet been socialized to fit in to a society that squashes it. They don't care if people think that they are silly while they dance in the front yard for all the neighbors to see. Children are just pure love and light. If you really want to get in touch with your inner child, become freer, play, have fun, enjoy the moment, do cartwheels in the front yard. We play roles to fit into society, and we suppress our true nature out of fear or a fear for what other people think. If you find yourself worrying about being judged, remember that it's merely just socialized in you, not the real you. Boy, can you imagine a time where you didn't care about what people think? Now, many of you may say, oh, I don't care what people think, but you know that's not true. We would like to buck society and buck the system, but really we do want to be liked. We do want to fit in. Some of us go to great lengths to do that, becoming people that we just truly aren't in order to fit in. Becoming more aware of your thoughts. You may be shocked by the number of negative thoughts that run through your mind on any given day. After so long, our reality becomes to take shape based on all of those conditional thinking patterns. Become more aware of the quality of your thinking. Allow yourself to sit quietly every morning before starting your day for just 5 to 10 minutes. Remember, I've talked about Mel Robbins, who says she gives herself 30 before 7:30. That was her little quip to remember her mantra. But before she pulls the cell phone over, starts looking at her email, before she turns on the news, before anything, she gives herself 30 minutes of quality time to work on her own goals. How amazing is that? She even gets up earlier in order to do it. So that's cool too. Becoming more aware of the quality of your thinking is so important. Gosh, we let so much garbage go into our brains, right? Thoughts will come and go, but just allow them to do just that without getting attached to them. Don't jump into that negative pool and start swimming. Just observe them. When you're finished, continue observing the mind throughout the day. We have so much unconscious beliefs that we've taken on over the years that were probably handed down to us from somebody else, and that we believe to be who we are. Have you gotten any of those? Oh, you're lazy. You're not smart. You're never going to amount to anything. We hear a lot of that. It's, even though we might have buried it really deep, it can still surface without warning. Becoming more aware of the quality of your thoughts, letting go of the old beliefs, and becoming more present can help in revealing your true nature. We are all so much more than old negative thinking patterns. Follow your intuition. This is probably one of the most important factors in being yourself. It's easy to ignore your intuition because you feel obligated to others. Their happiness seems more important than yours. when you start following the little nudges and urges that you get, you will have hopped onto the magic carpet ride of awesomeness. It doesn't mean that you will never have bumps on the road, but when you are in alignment with your soul, you will always be steered in the best possible direction. Really listening. Sometimes we're so busy, we don't give ourselves a chance to just listen. Sometimes when I'm walking the dog, I always want to put my earbuds in. Sometimes I'll listen to music. Sometimes I'll listen to a book on tape. And sometimes when I'm feeling really overwhelmed, I don't listen to anything. I listen to nature, the birds, the wind, the traffic, other dogs barking, my own dog panting, whatever that may be. But I just listen to my own thoughts. And that's so important. I don't think we do that enough. In this busy, chaotic, overstimulated world, we don't get that opportunity to just unplug and listen to the universe. Now, before you go and quit your job, you can begin with small things such as following through when you feel the urge to make a phone call. That's one thing. Act on it. Send an email or take a different route to work. These are ways that you can switch up your day. Your job routine may have to be somewhat of a routine. When you get into the habit of doing this with small things, it makes it easier to say yes to the big things and to trust. How do any of these things help you to just be yourself? Well, they help you to be in alignment with your true nature, your authentic self. That's the real you. That is beyond all of those conditioned beliefs and thinking patterns that you've accumulated through your life. It's important to love and accept ourselves for where we are at the moment. It's easy to suppress your true nature in order to please others and to fit in. When you let go of the old ways of thinking, follow your bliss and do what you love, you begin to align with happiness and peace. These are all indicators that you're connected with your true nature. You're then allowing your real self to shine in all its glory. Doesn't that sound amazing? Really being able to be yourself. Well, I want you to think about that. Bask in that idea of waking up tomorrow without any personas, without any shame or guilt, and just being your true self. As a life coach, I'm often asked if you could go back and tell a parent one thing to communicate to their child, what would that be? And without a doubt, it's how to love yourself. Self-love and a healthy self-concept. When you have a strong core and sense of who you are, it's easier for you to stand firm on your morals and values, to defend what you believe instead of being afraid that it won't be popular or you won't be liked. A positive sense of self is one of the greatest gifts you can give your child. Children with high self-esteem feel loved and competent and develop into happy, productive people. So maybe you didn't get that positive reinforcement by your parents, and now you're having to dig deep and do all the work on your own. Let bygones be bygones and embrace this journey of self-discovery. As hard as it is, sometimes you'll be better for it. But what if you could go back, or maybe you'll have the chance to positively influence someone else? Well, Parents Magazine gives us some do's and don'ts to consider. Think of these not only as developing a child, but do's and don'ts for yourself. Think about it that way. We're still healing that inner child, remember. Do give children choices. Giving children choices within a reasonable set of options pre-selected by you makes them feel empowered. For example, at breakfast, you might offer your child an option of eggs or pancakes. Learning to make simple choices while they're young will help prepare your child for the more difficult choices they'll face as they grow. My dad used to take my brother and I to a smorgasbord. I know that's going to date me, but for those of you that don't know the difference from a smorgasbord to a buffet, let me just tell you, well, my term is that the smorgasbord, you get in line and you have to keep going. You don't go back. It's one time through. You have your vegetables, your salads, your meat, your dessert. One time through, lots of different choices. Buffet, you can go back and forth. So at any rate, he knew that we would stop up the entire traffic behind us if we were given option to get anything on the menu, right? So we would come up to the vegetable and he would say, peas or carrots, not all the other ones. So we had two choices. We got to the meat, fish or chicken. And that gave us that sense of empowerment, but also expedited the line, right? Don't do everything for your children. Be patient and let them work things out for themselves. For example, it may be faster and easier to dress your preschooler, but letting them do it themselves will help them learn a new skill. The more they meet new challenges, the more competent and confident they will feel. Do let them know no one is perfect and explain that no one expects them to be either. The way you react to your child's mistakes and disappointments colors the way they will react. Don't gush or offer insincere praise. Kids are masters at detecting insincere praise or baseless compliments. Praise your child often, but be specific in your compliments so your words don't ring hollow. For instance, instead of reacting to your child's latest drawing, "Wow, that's great, you're the best artist in the world," try something like, "I really like how you drew the whole family. You even included details like daddy's beard." In early childhood, teachers are also taught not to say "good job," but to instead notice the child. "Good job" is your judgment, right? And what does it even mean? "Good job, good job. Everything's a good job." How about, "I like the way you hung your coat up and got in line without being asked." "I like the way you gave it your all." So that can teach us to be specific. Do assign age-appropriate household chores. Give children responsibility for tasks such as setting the table, walking the dog, unfolding laundry, or folding laundry. They'll increase their feelings of competency and bolster their problem-solving skills. Don't draw comparisons between your children. Instead, appreciate each one's individuality and special gifts. I think we can all think back to times where parents might not have remembered that one, and maybe we didn't either as parents. Don't call children names or use sarcasm to make a point. Never belittle your child's feelings. When you get angry, take a short break, walk away so you don't say anything you'll regret. And keep in mind, you can dislike a child's action without disliking the child. Be sure to illustrate the difference for your child. Do spend some one-on-one time with your child, whether it's grabbing a bite to eat or taking a bike ride. Try to schedule some alone time with your child at least once a week. This is a great opportunity to talk about what's on their mind and to cement the bond the two of you share. Now, how can you find your self-love and healthy self-concept so you can learn to be yourself? Well, it starts with acceptance. That doesn't mean you can strive for better or that you can't strive for better and set goals and have dreams. That doesn't mean that. Acceptance doesn't mean you give up. It doesn't mean settling in any way. It means accepting that you are unique, special, full of possibilities, creative, and passionate. Having acceptance is learning to love who you are now. Love the person you are, the person you're trying to become, and everything in between. Many of us withhold love from ourselves because we don't feel worthy yet. We aren't handsome enough yet, pretty enough, skinny enough yet, smart enough, talented enough yet. You fill in the blank. We're always under construction. Think of all the time we've wasted and love lost and all the time we spent loathing ourselves. None of that can be undone. But it can change moving forward. Take out a piece of paper and write down all the things you value about yourself. Doesn't matter how small or short your list is, it's a place to start. What do you like about you? Have you ever asked someone else? Try consulting with your accountability partner, we're always talking about, for some honest feedback. Some of your most positive attributes that stand out to others may have not even made your list. Don't rely solely on your own overly critical eye to give an accurate account on what makes you, you. I found this narrative on Instagram, which I want to share with you. So beautiful. Our narratives, our self-narratives, can be so damaging. Let's think about them in a positive way. And this is from Havilah Cunningham. Her narrative one is, I hate my body. I can't lose weight. I can't lose the stretch marks. I'll never be able to go back to what I was. It's too late. I should have been more disciplined. Maybe then I wouldn't feel so humiliated by the way I look. What if we turned that narrative into, I'm proud of my body. It's been good to me. It gave me four little humans, four brains, four faces, four boys. I'm grateful for the marks on my body. They prove I lived. The extra weight represents the croissants I ate with the love of my life in Paris. The cookie I ate because Becca made it for me. The donuts we splurged on because we're a family and families celebrate life together. I can change. I can focus on getting stronger, living longer by making better choices. I'm not going to be what I was, but I'm going to be the best, healthiest version of myself. How about this narrative? I hate getting old. I feel more tired at night. I don't know what's cool anymore. The guy at the grocery store calls me ma'am. I have a hard time recognizing myself in pictures. I look more tired than I feel. My skin is sagging. My hair is turning gray. I'm not a young mom. I should have started earlier. The best is behind me. What if we change that narrative? I'm aging with grace. Grace to be older. Grace to be the oldest in the room. Grace to let my body age without anger. I don't have to look young to be beautiful. I'm the right mom for my kids. My life is like a well-worn shoe. I like it. It's comfortable. It's me. Bleach that gray. Drink water. Dance more. Rock a one piece. It's normal to age. You're normal. How about this last one? I'm running out of time. I wish I would have felt this comfortable in my 20s. Why is it when you finally have the money and the wisdom, you're halfway done with your life? This is as good as it's going to get. I've peaked. I wish I could pause life right here. Loss is coming. How about I'm right on time. I'm comfortable with my life because I've worked hard to build the one I want. Older people are happier in life. They look at you in the eyes. They have time. I have time. What I'm supposed to do, I will do. What narratives are you going to believe today? What are you going to say to yourself? How are you going to start finding you? Have you heard of the Enneagram test? I had neither. I mentioned this on an earlier show, but someone came up to me after a public speaking event and said, oh, I really enjoyed everything you had to say. I have to know your number. And I had no idea what she was talking about. She was a young girl. I thought, wow, what a weird way to ask for my phone number. But when I asked her, she said, your Enneagram number. And I thought, well, what the hey is that? So let me tell you, in case you don't know, I'm sure I'm the last one on the planet that knows about it, but the Enneagram is a system of personality typing that describes patterns in how people conceptualize the world and how they manage their emotions. The Enneagram model describes 9 different personality types and maps each of these types on a 9-pointed diagram, which helps to illustrate how the types relate to one another. So according to the Enneagram, every personality type has a certain worldview and looks at the world through their own lens or filter. This makes it possible to explain why people behave in certain ways. By describing how the basic personality adapts and responds to both stressful and supportive situations, the Enneagram shows opportunities for personal development and provides a foundation for understanding others. And that's exactly what she told me. She said, well, we use this, her generation, to get to know somebody before you get to know somebody, or to figure out how to get to know someone. So, of course, completely intrigued, I had to take the test. So you have a test, series of questions. You can go online and find the Enneagram, and that's in case you are like me and didn't know. It's Enneagram, and you can look that up and take that test. And then you can score. There's 9 of them. The giver, the achiever, romantic, investigator, questioner, enthusiast, challenger, and peacemaker. Oh, and perfectionist. Maybe that's the same thing as achiever. Sorry. Perfectionist is another one. So you can take that. And then, of course, it will show you your results where you score higher. Whatever you're highest in, like the first 2 or 3, is really what your number is. So my highest is giver. I was pleased by that. So giver, the caring interpersonal type, demonstrates generosity, people-pleasing. There's that people-pleasing. And possessiveness. Let's go into more characteristics of this type 2. Warm smile and eyes. I like that. Approachable, radiates kindness. Vocal volunteer activist. Excellent team player. Caring and gentle. Nurturing and patient. Smooth, flowing movements. So there's a whole thing that tells you exactly this type. So my top 4 are giver, achiever, and romantic. So maybe you can dig into a little bit more of what makes you you by understanding the new generation's view of that. So I challenge you, let go, release the doubt, the control, and the responsibility you're carrying and channeling. Channel that energy into your own learning of who you are. Start with one thing you value and go on a quest to uncover more. Revisit the joy and possibilities your inner child possessed and get back to being you. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, and how I wound up here.